Welcome to the shiur in Aksava Kabbalah Parshas Pekudei. Parshas Pekudei is rather short to start with and very, very repetitive. In other words, it's, again, obviously nothing in Torah is really repetitive, but on the surface seems to be much of a review of many of the things that are already put forward in Parshas Tetzaveh. The Aksava Kabbalah has exactly three pages on the whole Parsha. So what I'm going to try to do tonight, you know, being that there's sort of a limited amount of Aksava Kabbalah comments, I want to take a few short ones and try to put them together in the time that we have together tonight. So the Parsha starts off, Eila Pekudei HaMishkan. Eila Pekudei HaMishkan, Unkelus translates, Ilein Minyone Mashkano. These are the countings that are related to the Mishkan. Again, everything is counted in terms of the amounts of gold and silver and the like that were donated towards the Mishkan. So commenting on that word Pekudei, which after all is the word which describes the Parsha, Ksava Kabbalah quotes from Shlomo Pappenheim, as he's wont to do. Shlomo Pappenheim, as we pointed out before, is one of the German commentators of the 1700s, was a Baldiktok, a linguist. And Shlomo Pappenheim writes that there's a difference between Sphira and Pekida. To be Sofer and to be Pokade, both are Hebrew words which imply the idea of counting. But what exactly is the difference between Sphira and Pekida? So he writes, again, quoting Shlomo Pappenheim in the Yiri Shlomo, Sphiras Pratiyim Achadiyim Zelhozenikros Sphira. When you just count individual things in a sequence, so that's called sphira, you're counting. Sphiras pratiyim klaliyim zelozer, la sosu klalecha tikari pkido. However, when you count different groups of things, and you come out with a reckoning, a tabulation, so that's considered to be pkido. Right? I guess the difference in English, we would say, is the difference between to count and to tabulate, you know, or to make a reckoning, to add up things to one another. So by way of example, he says, Shim yesh asara pratim achadiyim, umona min echar ad asara yikare tzfira. If you have 10 units, and you count, 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to 10, so that's called tzfira. Shiyesh kan prat echar amachzik shnei achadiyim. However, when there's one type of something which has two different units within it, and then a different type of something else which has three units in it, and then a third type which has five units. In other words, you know, you're working the store, somebody comes to make a purchase, so they buy, you know, two tomatoes, three cucumbers, and the five onions, and you want to tabulate, you know, what would be the price, you know, the total price, given that it's X number of cents per onion, X number of cents per tomato, and the like. So that he says, pokad, right? That's called the idea of pekida. Where does the word pokad come from in the sense of tabulating? So in its origin, says Aksava Kabbalah, it's related to the very first laning we have in the year. Hashem pokad is Sara. Hashem remembered Sara. Pokad in that context means he remembered. Kitzarch l'skar b'zichrono kamus kol schum v'schum u'l'tzarfum b'machshavto l'hotzim ayam asach hakolo. Because again, in the day and age before calculators, if you're making a tabulation, you have to remember, you know, various different numbers and add them together in order to get the sum total. And also, if I'm counting, I don't really have to remember all that much. 1, 2, 3. But if I'm adding stuff up, there's a certain amount of memory that, you know, before calculators was involved in that. And therefore, the term to calculate or to tabulate is related to the word, you know, with pekida in the sense of remembering. You have to remember in order to tabulate. That's why when we find that counting is applied, that the word pokad is applied to counting, it's typically applied not so much to counting things, but to counting people. We'll give examples of that. Batam shein derech limnos b'nei adam kemo sh'ar divarim echad le'echad. Rach sofer mosam ha'idei tziruf sechumos habatim v'amishpachos. Typically speaking, when people are counted, again, leaving aside the fact that in halacha there are issues with counting people directly, but, you know, even leaving aside the halachic aspects, it's not typical to just count people in a direct fashion, 1, 2, 3, 4, but rather any kind of counting, any kind of census of people, more often than not, involves adding up various computations in order to compute a census. You know, she'eda t'chilo, he says, for instance, a person will first know, schum nefesh kol bayis b'fnei atzmo. Let's say you're taking a census. So you figure out how many people are in this household, and then how many people are in that household, and how many people in a third household. And then you add the various households one to another. You figure out how much are, you know, all together between the houses. Right, we're going to read next week in the Haftarah how Shaul HaMelech, when he's about to go to war against Amalek, counts the people. How does he count the people? Literally, he counted the people with sheep. How do you count the people with sheep? So he explains. A household that had five people would put aside five sheep. A household that had three people would put aside three sheep. And then you just, you know, you calculate, okay, five sheep plus three sheep, you know, in other words, there's a certain amount of calculation, not just simply counting in the direct fashion of the term. V'chein kan, so just coming back to us, when it says pekudei hamishkan, right, so even though Unkelus translates pekudei as minyane, the counting of, the word pekudei is used in terms of counting the things that were donated to the Mishkan instead of the word svira, because hayu svira paschumas hamachulafos asher lezav lezav lekesef lekesef lenuchoshes lenuchoshes lisnagu b'shalda. There was a need to differentiate. There was they were adding up certain amounts of gold, adding up certain amounts of silver. There was a certain amount of calculation and tabulation which was going on together. So that was what was necessary in order to add up the various parts of the Mishkan. Hence the word pekudei is the tabulation, the calculation, the reckonings that are related to the Mishkan, not just simply the counting in a simple fashion one after another. And that's just in terms of the start of the Sedra. I wanted to skip to an idea that was a little bit technical, the difference between Sphira and Pekidah. I want to skip to an idea which is a little less technical at the end of the Sedra, which the Aksava Kabbalah quotes from the Vilna Gaon. So we had mentioned the very, very first Shia when we introduced the Aksava Kabbalah. The Aksava Kabbalah was more or less a contemporary of the Vilna Gaon, as the beginning of his life overlapped the end of the life of the Vilna Gaon. And interestingly enough, it seems like the Aksava Kabbalah, despite the fact that he was in Germany and the Gaon was in Vilna, he nonetheless was able to come into contact with some of the Torah from the Vilna Gaon, and one of the earliest sources we have of some of the Gaon's Torah is actually the Baal Aksava Kabbalah. So, at the very, very end of the Sedra, just skipping forward, so we're told, Ki anan Hashem ala Mishkan yomam, ve'esh ti alai lo bo. The cloud of Hashem rested on the Mishkan during the day, and at night there would be a kind of fire that was there over the Mishkan. Le'enei kol beis Yisrael b'chol mas'eihem. And this was in the presence in front of the eyes of the entire Jewish people wherever they traveled. So the Haksava Kabbalah quotes the Gra as follows. Af sheholach lefneim ha'onan b'siyosam b'Mitzrayim. We know this idea that God went before the Jewish people with a cloud during the day and went before them with fire at night is something that goes back to Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? It says in Parshas B'shach, Hashem alech lefneim b'amud eish, B'amud anon man chosam aderech v'laylo b'amud eish l'hoir lo'em God went before the Jewish people as a cloud, as a fire, in order to show them the way out of Mitzrayim. So yes, that was true. However, lo hoya elo l'shato ad hayom. The Gra writes that that cloud and that fire, which went before the Jewish people when they left Mitzrayim, took them to Yamsuf, and then it stopped. V'gam lo hoya le'enei kol Yisrael elo fnei anavim shibohem. He also writes that although the pillar of cloud and the fire was going before the Jewish people on their way leaving Mitzrayim to Yam Suf, the vast majority of the Jewish people did not appreciate or realize that there was this cloud or fire in front of them. Only the Nevi'im, who were able to, you know, to see a little bit deeper than the average person, were able to appreciate the presence of the Anan, the presence of the Esh. All of that changed after the Chet HaEgel. So in other words, this was a one-time, you know, up until the Chet HaEgel, this was a one-time event, the cloud, the fire, and then it disappeared. After the Chet HaEgel, so Moshe Rabbeinu davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'niflinu ani ve'amecha, let me and your nation, v'niflinu, let us be distinct, let us be different, let us be special. In what way are we going to be special? Let us A, have this Anan and Esh constantly, and B, let it be something that the average Jew can see as well, not just a Navi. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu respond to Moshe Rabbeinu after that tefillah, v'niflinu ani ve'amecha? HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers, neged kol amcha esa niflos, right? It's part of the laning that we had, Parshas Kisisa, so part of the laning that we have for Ta'anesim. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I will perform miracles neged kol amcha, in the eyes of all of your people, in such a way that the entire people will be able to see. So essentially, says the Vilna Gaon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered the tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu. And he said, and says the Vilna Gaon, v'zeh le'enei kol beis Yisrael. Right? That's the pasuk which we have at the very end of Parshas Pekudei, the very end of Sefer Shmos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu grants the request of Moshe Rabbeinu. Let Klal Yisrael be unique. Let them be different. Let the Esh and the Anan that accompanied us as we left Mitzrayim be a constant presence in the lives of Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, yeah, okay. Done. The Esh and the Anan are going to envelop the Mishkan, and that's going to be constant. It's not going to be something that's going to disappear. Not only that, but every Jew is going to be able to recognize that and appreciate the presence of the Anan and the Esh. And that's just the Vilna Gaon, that's the pasuk. Le'enei kol beis Yisrael. Anan Hashem al mishkan yom ve'esh ti alayla bo. Le'enei kol beis Yisrael. The entire Jewish people are able to see this Anan and this Esh, that which was restricted to the Nevi'im, which when they left Mitzrayim. So that's an interesting shot in this pasuk, and sort of connects the Yetzias Mitzrayim to the very, very end of Parshas Pekudei and Sefer Shmos. But then the Gaon adds one more idea. It says, you know, it says in Yeshaya, again a pasuk which we're also familiar with, ki ayin ba'ayin yiru b'shuv Hashem tziyon. We will be able to see with our eyes when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to return to tziyon. So what does that mean? Again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not have a body. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not something that we can perceive with our naked eyes. So what's Ayin ba'ayin yiru b'shuv Hashem tziyon? So that's the Gra says, when Moshiach comes, the Anan and the Esh are going to come back, and they're going to be visible not only by the Nevi'im, but by the average Jew as well. Ki ayin ba'ayin yiru b'shuv Hashem tziyon, just along the lines as, you know, le'enei kol beis Yisrael, as spelled out in this last pasuk of the Sedra and of the Sefer Shmos as a whole. A very short but poignant idea, which he brings out in this context. Moving backwards a little bit, so we started with the beginning, and we finished off in the end. Moving back a little bit, so we have, Perek Mem describes the final touches of the Mishkan, and we're told in Pasuk Yud Ches. One second. Yeah. We're told in Pasuk Yud Ches, Vayakem Moshe Es HaMishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu erected the Mishkan. Vayitein Es Adono, Vayosem Es Kiroshov, Vayitein Es Berichov. So it describes three different things which are being put together as part of the Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu places the Adonim, the sockets. He puts the kroshim, the boards, into the Adonim. And then the brichim, the bolts, which go across the kroshim, the boards to hold them in place, are put in place as well. It doesn't sound so significant, but the Baal HaKtav HaKabbalah points out that the verb changes in each of these three cases. Vayitein es Adonov, Vayosem es Kroshov, Vayitein es Berichov. So why doesn't it just simply say Vayitein, 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 or Vayosem, Vayosem, Vayosem? Vayitein or Vayosem basically mean the same thing. He placed, right, in the Targum, it writes, V'yahav yasamchoi, v'shavi yasapoi, v'yahav yasavrohi. Right, also translating it literally, V'yahav, he put it, he gave it, v'yosem, he put it down. So what's the difference between v'yiten and v'yosem, and why does it go back and forth, you know, depending on whether we're talking about the sockets or the boards, or the bolts that go across? So he writes, he quotes Shlomo Pappenheim from the Riyah Shlomo, and he makes the following distinction. Lashon Sima Yishamesh Kishiyi Yasham Ezeh Seder Mechuyo V'Na'os. Vayosem means he placed it carefully in a very particular order. V'shiyam Yanat Sarech L'shiyi Yadavar Mesudar Medubuk Davko B'makom O B'zman O B'inyan Zeh Lo B'makom B'zman O B'inyan Acher. Vayosem implies that a particular place or time or fashion was chosen to the exclusion of any other time or place or fashion of doing something. Right? In other words, there's a particular care in the detail of how something was placed. So, therefore, Lochein Abrichim V'Adonim Shlo Yosrichim Seder V'Erech Kohar Yushalim Zelozeh Omer Bohem Lashon Nesino Greda B'lo Seder V'Erech. So coming back to our pasuk, when the Adonim were placed on the ground, so the Adonim, the sockets, were arranged in no particular order. You know, it wasn't, you know, there was no chachma as to which Eden would go where, you know, which of the Adonim would go in which place. They were arranged, they were put down, and that was it. The same thing with the brichim, the same thing with the bolts. You know, it didn't really make that much of a difference how we, you know, as long as they were put in the right place, it didn't really make a difference which briach, you know, necessarily was used. Aval akroshim ha yutzrichim sidur ben keresh l'chaveiro shlo yeh b'neim revach klal. But there was a lot more chokmah, a lot more wisdom that went in to arranging the boards. The boards had to be placed next to one another just so, so that there wouldn't be any empty space between the boards whatsoever. It had to be seamless between the two boards, right? If you ever have the experience of trying to build one of those pieces of furniture at home, you know, you figure you got to be smart. You'll get from IKEA, and then, you know, I'm handy. I can assemble all of that. You know, when you put it together at home, sometimes, you know, there's a little bit of a gap. There's a little bit of a something. You know, it doesn't always line up 100% right. Maybe that's not your experience, but that's certainly my experience. But here, you know, when it came to the Mishkan, the kroshim really had to be flush with one another in the fullest sense of the term. Where do we see that? We see that in the Gemara and Shabbos. The Gemara Masechet Shabbos asks, where do we see the 39 different melachos in terms of the melachos HaMishkan? So the Gemara wants to know, you know, it's usher to write two letters on Shabbos. Right? It's usher to write anything on Shabbos. But it's a nisa daraisa, chiyuv chatos, to write two letters on Shabbos. Vasef is two letters. Where do we get the idea of two letters from? And, you know, where in the making of the Mishkan did they write two letters? So the Gemara explains that they would write two letters on two krushim, two boards that were supposed to be placed next to one another in order to match one up with the other. Why do you have to match one up with the other? A board is a board is a board. You see, it's not true. You know, so you see that there was tremendous painstaking care given to arranging the boards just so and lining them up in a very deliberate kind of manner so that, again, there wouldn't be any seam between the boards, and it should be as flush as possible around the Mishkan. So therefore there was a lot of deliberation. You know, the Krushim were arranged in a very, very deliberate manner. L'fikach Amar Balahen Lashon Sima. That's why it says Vayasem. Vayasem always implies it was placed deliberately. So Vayitain es Adonav. The Adonim were put down. Vayitain es Brichov. The Brichim, the bolts were just placed. Vayasem es Krushov. The Krushim, the boards, were placed with a great deal of care. They were placed very, very deliberately because there, you know, much more thought had to go into it than the other two. Similarly, we find this two pesukim later. V'chein Amar l'Kamon, in Pasuk Chaf we find, Vayikach, Vayitein es ha'edos el ha'aron, Moshe Rabbeinu placed the luchos into the aron, Vayitein, Vayosem es habadim al ha'aron. And then he placed the rods on the aron. So again, Vayitein es ha'edos, Vayosem es habadim. Vayitein Vayosem, it means he placed. Why Vayitein Vayosem? Why does it change? So he writes, Shiba'aron lahaya hekped, im ha'edos hayamunach b'tzvano b'drono. There was no, it didn't really matter when you put the luchos into the aron, whether they were a little bit this way or a little bit that way, you know, it didn't matter. They didn't have to be fit into a slot or anything of that nature. The luchos were placed into the aron, that was good enough. So Vayite, he put it in. Aval abadim hayitzarach shelo yichnesu o shelo yivlutu yoser midai. When it came to putting the rods into the side of the aron, they had to be placed just so. They shouldn't be shoved in too much. They shouldn't stick out too much. They had to be put in just the right fashion. Lachain amar b'lahem lashon sima. So that's the lashon of vayosem, which implies a greater degree of deliberation that applies to the badim. And then he adds, "Umizet takish al shar makom shebchol makom sheyishamish b'lashon sima yesham eizet tzarech shal sidur ba'aracha im b'makom ol bizman." Whenever we find the word vayosem, where you could have said vayitein, vayosem always implies that there's a very deliberate nature to the time which is to the time or the place which is being chosen. For instance, Vayosem Hashem Moed Lemor. By the Makos, it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu picked the time, right? And he said, L'machar Yi HaOsar Zez. This is going to come such and such a time tomorrow. Or Hein Gvir Samtiv Loch Vayisimeini La'av Lefaro. Right? When people are placed in a position of importance, right? When Yitzchak tells Esav, I can't really give you a bracha because I made Yaakov already over you a master. And Gvir Samtiv Loch, or, you know, Yosef HaTzadik says, Vayisimeini La'av Lefaro, you know, he made me into an important person, you know, vis-a-vis Paro. So that Sima means that the person wasn't just haphazardly handed a position, but rather he was given a position with a very deliberate set of understandings, of obligations, and the like. And, you know, that's implied in the Lashon of Sima.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Quickly, was the Mishkan disassembled also as well as assembled?
Yes. Yeah.
Instructions given for the disassembly?
So they had to put it back. They had to put it back together. You know,
the same degree of exactitude.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 100%. In other words, it wasn't a a simple knockoff kind of job.
Yeah, no, I understand. And the clouds of, I mean, we say that the, back to your original point, Rabbi Ram, about the presence of Hashem, the physical manifestation of a spiritual cloud or whatever it was, did it stay there during that time when the Mishkan wasn't?
When they traveled, so the Anan would go with them, the cloud would go with them, and then when they camped and they set up the Mishkan, so the Anan would come down upon the cloud would come down upon the Mishkan itself. One last point, just before we break for Ma'ariv, and again, it's a small point, but it's worth noting. So, in Perek Lamed Ches, Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Lamed Vav. So the pasuk says in Lamed Gimel, "Vayaviu es haMishkan al Moshe." They brought the whole Mishkan to Moshe, and then it lists off all the parts of the Mishkan. And then in pasuk Lamed Vav, it says, "Es haShulchan es kol Kelav." They brought the Shulchan with all the table, with all of its vessels, to Moshe Rabbeinu. The eighth lechem aponim, and they brought the lechem aponim to Moshe as well. So the Alaksav HaKabbalah is an interesting ha'ara. He says the Gemara says that there was no baking involved in the preparations for the Mishkan. Why does the Gemara bring that in? So again, we learn out the Lamed Ches Melachos from everything that was done in preparing the Mishkan. One of the Lamed Ches Melachos, as we know, is Bishul, is cooking. So the Gemara makes the point that, you know, there was no baking involved in the preparations for the Mishkan. There was cooking, says the Gemara. What was the cooking? They used to cook the herbs in order to make the dyes to color the various parts of the Mishkan. But the Gemara makes the point explicitly, they didn't bake in preparation for the Mishkan. So they had, it sounds like they baked the lechem haponim as part of preparing the Mishkan. Because in other words, when they made the Mishkan, part of what they made, it sounds like, was the first set of lechem aponim. In other words, they changed over the lechem aponim every week, but if they brought the lechem aponim to Moshe as part of, you know, okay, now put the Mishkan together, it means that they prepared lechem aponim as part of the preparation for the Mishkan. So what do you mean? They didn't do baking as part of the preparation for the Mishkan. They very much did so. They baked the lechem aponim as per the pasuk. So Aksav HaKabbalah is so bothered by this kasha, he says that maybe after she'ena mechuvah b'mikros ha'ila afias lechem aponim kim ha'kelim ha'nitzrochim lechem aponim. Maybe when it says that they brought the lechem aponim to Moshe Rabbeinu, it doesn't mean that they brought the actual lechem aponim. It was only once the Mishkan was up and running that they that they actually baked, you know, the first set of lechem aponim and put it on the shulchan. But rather, when it says the eis lechem aponim, they brought the lechem aponim, it means they brought the kelim, you know, the vessels that are associated with the lechem aponim, in which case you would have to read the pasuk a little bit non-literally. Es hashulchan es kol kelav the eis lechem aponim, the shulchan with all of its kelim for the lechem aponim. That's the way you'd have to read the pasuk according to the Baal HaKtav HaKabbalah. Okay? I think we, somewhat unusually, again, because of the not so long nature of the Ksav HaKabbalah this week. So we finished the shiur for tonight with Davin Ma'ariv, and then Be'ezus Hashem next week with Parashas Vayikra, we'll have a lot more to talk about, you know, between Mincha and Ma'ariv. Here, Rav Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Rasa Kodesh Baruch Hu.